from the Midas of Roseburg Studio, KQEN weather forecast. Today, sunny and a high near 90 degrees. Tonight, clear and 56 for a low. Tomorrow, sunny and 90 as well. Then Saturday, a hard right turn. Some showers, possibly a thunderstorm. High near 62 degrees. Sunday, back into the warmer weather. Sunny and 71 degrees. Monday, chance of showers, otherwise cloudy and 73. 81 degrees now. KQEN news time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Thanks for being here and making this program part of your day every weekday. Of course, we're spending lots of time, most everything related to the COVID-19 situation. Wanted to check in with another lawmaker that represents parts of Douglas County. State Representative Cedric Hayden, good afternoon. Thanks for being on.
Good afternoon, Kyle. Thank you for having me on.
So, legislative days, each chamber is on a little bit different schedule for that right now. Kind of explain what each body is doing.
Yeah, so legislative days are a time that we get together. The legislature gets together, the legislative branch gets together, and of course, normally that's done in the building and usually done within a three-day block time for the committee hearings, and then an additional day for task force, and then an overflow day. So in a five-day week, what we're seeing now under the social distancing COVID-19 protocols is we've gone to basically electronic, but the state uses a Microsoft meetings platform that we get on, committee members get on that platform. We have had some, growing pains with that and some glitches. So it has kind of gone from all of the conference calls that we've been talking about, with people not figuring out the mute button and all of those issues, to glitches in a system to where, I'm not that rural, but I come from a rural area where, I was on the House healthcare meeting the other day, and it just, my internet just shut off. So then you got to get back on there. So dealing with some interesting aspects of the legislative days being virtual to where we get on there. I have been through my committees on the House side. And the most of the House, although some of the House ones are continuing actually into the weekend, and then the Senate is picking up next week for theirs, my understanding. And so it's spread out more than consolidating it into a one week time frame.
Interesting. And of course, very different to have these where you cannot see people directly probably makes for kind of a different dynamic to things.
Well, it does. And one of the frustrating points, and I haven't experienced it in my committee directly to the extent that I didn't think it was fair. There is, time frame crunches when we're sitting on the dais and, agencies or individuals, advocates come and testify. The committee chair does have to monitor time, but there is an allowance for questions of the committee members. And they have adopted, for the most part, a policy that the committee members turn into the chair, like the vice chairs work with their committee members on either Republican side or the vice chair on the Democrat side works with their members. And, they collect the questions or ask them to turn the questions in through the chair, which is actually to the legislative assistant that helps us, called LPRO, the people that organize it, that position. So we send those questions in. Now, in the committees I've been in, there has been an allowance for, very brief questions. So we turn them in writing, and then we get to verbalize them. And so anybody watching it can hear that, but you might get one or two questions. So it's not near the engagement that we have, you know, and I can just imagine, you know, when subjects get a little more controversial, you know, we'll bat that back pretty hard at the dais, and, you know, it's there for the public to watch, and I think that's a healthy debate. But under the virtual, the chair has the option to mute all, right? And if they decide you don't get asked a question, you don't get an ask a question. You can't, you know, I guess you could make a silent protest on your little video screen if you wanted to. But it was pretty disappointing with particularly the unemployment or the employment office had theirs. Now, I'm not on that committee, so I didn't, you know, feel that pain personally of not being able to ask questions. But all the committee members weren't allowed to ask any questions. They were allowed or requested to turn their questions in. But it doesn't give the opportunity for legislators to share what their constituents are feeling. And that's really the only avenue under this virtual world that constituents can get a word in edgewise, because they can't, you know, sign up and be there under this scenario. And so it needs to come to the lawmakers. And when the lawmakers aren't able to share the stories of their constituents, particularly under the employment office and the lack of the claims being processed to the point where, you know, over 200,000 people or half of these claims haven't been processed to the point of, you know, funds going to those people. Now, the state kind of tried to pull the wool over us and said that they had processed 75% of the claims up to a couple of weeks ago. Well, that wasn't really true. It wasn't processed to the point that, you know, funds were going so that those people could afford food and keep in their houses. So a little frustration on my part there.
You mentioned the employment department. Let's talk about that. Of course, as you mentioned, there's still the backlog issue. They've been adding staff. They're still behind. And for people who have applied for benefits, and I've talked to some folks personally who have tried to get through, and these are people that know how to use a computer real well and all of that, just an intense level of frustration. Somebody talked about being on the phone, I forget how many times in the course of a day, being on and then being disconnected and calling back and starting the process over. And all of that adds to the fact that right now, they're unemployed. And in some cases, they've actually gone back to work, but are still owed several weeks of unemployment from being out.
Yeah, so pretty frustrating. And I can just give you an example. Last weekend, I won't use the name, but last weekend, one of the mayors in House District 7 that is within in the area that I represent got a hold of me, you know, and this was Saturday or Sunday, and said, you know, I got a couple of folks that are contacting me, and this unemployment thing is just, you know, they're going to lose their house type thing. And so I just share this because the only thing that we have found some success with, and we've been doing it for everybody that contacts us, it's a lot of work. My staff spends an enormous amount of time on that. But if I get an email or a phone call or a text message on social media, those are harder for me to pick up, but we do pick those up. And we get a name and a birth date, I have the opportunity as a representative to turn those in to a liaison at the unemployment office. And then that liaison takes that, we email those in, liaison takes that information and goes and finds the claim and reaches out to those people. We've been told that that's supposed to take about 48 hours. My experience is that it's taking between 48 hours and 4 or 5 days, you know, so double that time. But it's painfully slow, but we've done this for dozens of people, mostly in House District 7, that at least we get a connection with them and get them talking. And we've had some really good success stories or thank yous back on doing that. But when you have 220,000 people out there that have not received this check, that is not a functional way to approach this. It's the only thing we have.
State budget, are you getting any updated projections on that from what we've heard in the couple of weeks ago?
So, as we know, the forecast came out May 20th. I don't think we've talked since then. And so the revenue forecast, what I'm talking about, is when the Legislative Fiscal Office, they make an estimate of how much revenue that the state thinks is going to come in. And they have made an estimate that the state will be $1.7 billion short for the biennium, that's this time frame, and $10.5 billion. And keep in mind, we're halfway through the biennium, so, you know, in your head, you kind of have to double that. $10.5 billion over the next 5 years. And so you're really looking at that 2.7 annually, or almost $5 billion, just under $5 billion a year. Now, that is general fund budgets that they're talking about. I think it is important to understand that we have a lot of other funds that come into the state that the revenue forecast has not addressed. And so those are things like our gas tax, because those funds don't go to the general fund, the loss of our hospital and long-term care, healthcare insurance, and hospital assessments. These are what fund Medicaid. So we have another two very large, I guess three very large buckets that aren't addressed in this forecast. That's going to be the Student Success Act, the gas tax, and all the healthcare taxes that are out there. And so the $2.7 billion, I think, is very underrepresentative of what we're looking at over the next couple of bienniums.
State Representative Cedric Hayden. More when we come back. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. Quick break on Inside Douglas County, 1246 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1. Later, KQEN Local Talk at 4, Northwest Wine Radio. Brian Calvert looking at wine, beer, and spirits around the Pacific Northwest. On tomorrow's Inside Douglas County, we've got regional economist Brian Rooney of the Oregon Employment Department. We'll talk about the unemployment picture in Douglas County and look at some of the state numbers as well and go deep in the process there and see what we can learn from Brian Rooney. State Representative Cedric Hayden with us this afternoon. We've been talking about the budget situation, hearing about some potentially deep cuts due to the budget shortfall we were talking about before the break. Those could be education, state police, a lot more. And in some cases, some of these agencies that are being asked to do more now during this pandemic are being asked to do more, and at the same time looking at just going into the next fiscal year, possibly having a lot less funds to do those things with.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. So we've talked a bit about, you know, the different buckets of money that are going to be reduced. But there's also, you brought up, you know, they're being asked to do more with less. And so there's things that we know historically come that we don't really have budgeted for or set aside. And that's, you know, it's getting warmer. It's wildfire season, you know, historically between 20 and $80 million have been utilized on the state side to deal with wildfire. And you know, that can be in addition to the insurance that the state buys. You've got a couple hundred million dollars that recently the governor, after a small PERS reform passed, she added $200 million to public employee raises. And so that's going to, you know, feed into the increased cost. And then under our Medicaid costs, we're looking at right now, we're looking at about 50,000 increased caseloads. Now, these are a little different. These people have come from an environment to where they were contributing through their private insurance that they had through their work. They were contributing to the pot of money that funds our Medicaid, where historically before, people that weren't covered weren't necessarily contributing to that pot of money. And so you're taking people that were contributing to cover our Medicaid cost and now putting them from the credit side to the debit side of the ledger, where they're going to be needing that help. So it's a double hit, and it's going to be around an additional $80 million that the state needs to pick up to account for those increases. The other thing I think is really important for people to realize is that the PERS costs increase when the market goes down, and that the funds coming in from our Student Success Act are going to be affecting the next biennium, and I think it's going to be significant. So there is a lot to consider there.
And you talked about the next biennium. Some people say it's going to take a few years for the Oregon economy to dig out of this economic hole that it's in now. It's amazing to crater so quickly and then be told that it's going to be maybe 4 or 5 years before you get back totally to where you were just 10 weeks ago.
Well, I think that's correct, and you know, if you look at the national numbers, I think that helps bring a little vision into that. We're at, you know, basically 1 in 4 people that were working have applied for some sort of benefit. Now, to put that in numbers, our unemployment claims, I haven't seen them yet today. They do come out Thursday for Oregon, but nationally went up another $2.1 million or $2.1 million claims, and we're at 41 million claims nationally, with those claims coming in around 18,000 per week. And so it's not just Oregon, right? And so, it's not, okay, well, Oregon fix it and the economy will get going. It's globally. Right? It's globally. And so the demand, you know, as we're able to reopen, the demand there for manufacturing and stuff isn't going to be there. So, I am glad that, you know, it seems that the stock market, for all the circumstances, has stabilized and is showing some improvement there. I think this is a long-term effect that we're going to see. I don't think it's going to be, you know, 6 months or even a year.
Now, in the short term, though, as Phase 1 reopening has begun in most all of Oregon's counties, some of those folks who weren't working are now back to work. It would seem likely that when we look at the May numbers next month, that we'll see an improvement as those folks that were shuttered come back to work.
Well, I hope so. I hope to see that, you know, and you know, if you're looking at the detail of this, some of the school systems, particularly in the Portland area, and I haven't seen if any of the other districts have followed suit, but, you know, they have furloughed their teachers. So these are teachers that were receiving their payroll, being paid, and then they furloughed them for a day or two, or a day a week, and so that then they can qualify for the unemployment benefit. You know, my concern there is that we put more stress on the unemployment and we're creating more claims through that type of system when the public school system chooses to do something like that. So how much effect will that, and if that works to the extent that those agencies, will that spread? And I think it's unfortunate that we're seeing that happen, because those resources are really needed for the people that don't have a job otherwise now. So in May, I certainly hope it increases, but there are some factors there that we're seeing choice-wise by some school districts that can mitigate from that happening.
Douglas County and a number of other counties went into Phase 1 reopening almost a couple weeks ago, could be eligible to enter Phase 2 next Friday, 8 days from now. Any update on some of the guidelines from the governor's office for what Phase 2 might mean?
Well, one of the things that's been discussed a lot is how many people, right? How many keep, what does Phase 2 mean? And of course, in the faith-based community, 25 people for a church makes it really difficult for some of these churches to be able to, you know, hold their services. And will Phase 2 be at that 50 that we're expecting to be in place? And how many will be able to meet that? So I think it really comes down to the group size that's allowed to meet for those faith-based organizations. And of course, I'm sure you're aware of the lawsuits that have been filed and the Supreme Court coming back, and now new hearings will be had on that lawsuit, and a couple of new churches have filed. So, you know, the pressure that we're seeing from some of these organizations, faith-based organizations, I think is starting to move the dial on what happens with these phases. But I don't have a crystal ball. We are anticipating after 21 days that that we go to phase two. I know just personally with the church that I go to on the weekend, they are anticipating opening June 6th, 7th, that weekend. I'm looking forward to that.
And in talking to someone who is involved in one of the faith-based webinars, if I can say that, with the governor's office a couple of weeks ago, they were looking at the phase two number being 100 if you had social distancing, et cetera.
Yeah, I was aware of that conversation. Maybe that has been confirmed. I have not seen that 50 to 100 has been confirmed, and it is possible it has, but I may be behind on that.
Well, a lot of things going on. Got about 30 seconds left. What do you want to share with people on our way out?
Well, particularly if you're from House District 7, that is what we try and concentrate on. If you are having unemployment concerns, and you want to email to my legislative email, which you can just Google Senator Caden, state rep, and grab that link. We will turn your name and birth date in and the date that you filed into the liaison and do our best to get you an answer. I think that's the most important thing that's going on for people right now.
State Representative Senator Caden, thanks for being on Inside Douglas County.
Thank you, sir.
1258 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.